Wir gerne sehen, was ist los? It's deinen Freundo, Seth. I'm learning German. Yeah, in case you didn't know what that was. That is me trying to impress you with the little German that I know. Right now, I am actually learning German. I took it in high school. I goofed off the entire time. I did some other language learning apps. They taught me things like where the taxi stand is and how to find a bus, but not a lot of conversational German. Thankfully, that's what Babbel is all about. Babbel teaches you language conversationally, which, let's face it, that is what you want to know anyway. I don't know. When I was in school, you learned like how to count. You learned like the colors. You learned the shapes. Those are all important things, but they don't help you when you're in like Cologne, Germany with Ein Nierenstein, which, by the way, is German for kidney stone, an experience I can unfortunately speak personally to. But I've been using Babbel to learn to speak German again, better than I have before. I actually really like it because it is conversational. It's a little bit more relaxed. One of the things that it does that I really like is it'll sometimes show you what the literal English translation is. And I don't know why, but I find that very helpful in sort of understanding the structure, the grammar of a language, and sort of putting myself into that mind space. Since I'm only in Germany for Gamescom, which is like a week, week and a half, I'm not immersed in the German language. I'm not immersed in German culture. So what I do is the second best thing. I'm taking Babbel. Hopefully this year when I go to Germany, I'll be able to impress all the Germans with how much German I know from learning through Babbel. The app has pronunciation recognition, so you'll be able to learn how to speak better with your accent, how to actually properly pronounce the words. That way you won't get made fun of by a group of older German men because you said apple strudel and not Apfelstrudel. No, it's really cool. I'm going to say right now there is a special limited time deal for our listeners. Right now you can get up to 60% off your Babbel subscription, but only for our listeners, because you guys are the best ones, by the way, at babbel.com/realm. Get 60% off at babbel.com/realm. That is spelled babbel.com/realm. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Anna Sheridan, missing for nearly 6 months now.
That's not possible.
Someone with a more vivid imagination might decide she'd pierced the veil. There's no place for ghost stories in this investigation or any other.
I need you to find me.
The Sheridan Tapes, a serialized horror mystery podcast. Stream the complete series today on Realm and on all podcasting platforms.
Nintendo!
Welcome to Nintendo Voice Chat for the week of, what week is this? April 24th, 2015. I am your unprepared host, Jose Otero, and this is IGN's Nintendo Show. Joining me for now, because Brian will be here later, Brian Altano, who we all adore, is Per Schneider.
Hello. Hello, Per.
Hi, Jose. How's life?
Good.
Yeah.
Good. Yeah.
All right, so let's just jump right into it. Let's start with the Street Pass games, which you have been playing.
Yeah.
But I have not. I just started today, to be fair. So is this worth the investment?
The two Street Pass games so far, I don't know yet. I mean, it depends on how long-lasting they are. The fishing game, I dig. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's slower paced, so it's a little bit more like, you know, you're flower collecting, kind of like you're trying to collect all these fish. You're trying to combine, you know, you're trying to combine things to hook the right fish. The gameplay mechanics are super simple, of course.
Yep.
But yeah, I like it. I think it's cool, because especially because it lets you compare the size of the fish with your friends.
Okay.
So, like, each fish type has a leaderboard, and you can see your Street Pass friends and how they rank.
So what's the Street Pass side of it? Like, is it that you're getting bait from your friends?
That's it,
and,
yeah.
And that and just comparing scores, as it were?
Each one of your friends brings bait to the table, and, you know, exactly. And then you get the leaderboards option on top of that.
Okay, okay.
Which is, you know, it's very nice. So I like that one. The Zombies game as well. That my only worry with that one is that, you know, once you've explored most of the game, it's going to feel repetitive. Like, there is that potential, right? Like, it's not the same type of, you know, collection game that, at least for me, lasted longer. You know, I loved the Mii 4 shooter when I played it, but then it ended, and then there wasn't much to compel me to go back. So I'm a little worried that it might be like that.
So Battlegrounds starts that way, where it is a sort of a repetitive action-style game, but at the same time, it feels like it has the Dynasty Warrior effect, just waiting in the wings, where after you've done this enough times, it is going to wear on you a little bit. I do like, though, that the people you Street Pass show up as people you save, or that you can save. They could also team up with you.
Yeah, there's
depends on their personality, and it's picked at random.
Yeah, there's like, you know, like Jim McQuillan, one of our engineers, showed up in my game telling me he needed 4 new tires for his taxi cab, right? Mm-hmm. Like, so he stands at the sidelines telling you this. So you run around in the time limit. You have to look in the trunks of broken taxis and get the spare tires out. You're being attacked by zombies, so you do like the swoosh, 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 right? Mm-hmm. And like, of course, you can get like items and weapons and upgrade your character from your Street Pass friends as well. But like, it kind of, that's what I like about these games. It makes it more personal, right? Like, you're recognizing your friend, and your friend is asking for your help. And
and ultimately, that's what makes Street Pass really cool, is sort of the idea that you are sort of trading information with friends based on, and people you see every day, and sometimes people you don't know at all, you know, and just sort of having that exchange. I hate to ask this question, because I always feel like I don't know. I'm not always sure how to judge inherent value. But part of me wonders if of any software. But part of me wonders, is it, I don't want to say is it wrong, but is it a misstep to be charging for the Street Pass games? I feel like Street Pass is an inherent feature of the system. Yeah. It is something that is meant to exchange data between games that you pay for already. Yet the Street Pass mini games, the ones that they have added on over time, which, to be fair, they've added quite a few. Flower Town, Warrior's Way, Monster Manor were all part of that initial big update.
That you had to pay for.
Find Me Too.
Yeah, yeah.
And you had to pay for at least those three. And now you're paying for Ultimate Angler and Battleground Z as well, although it is a discounted price. And they are good at that.
Yeah.
I wonder, would it be better off for 3DS and for Street Pass if these games were free?
I think for consumers, of course, and for Street Pass, right, it would give people something to do outside of collecting the puzzle pieces. But at the same time, it's also not a selling point for the system, right? It's not that you learn that you get these little games for free that you want to pick up the system. And so, no, I think it's fine. I think, you know, like, it would be smart if they released a free application and then two pay-for applications just to reinvigorate the Street Passing, because that is now the problem, right? Like, not enough reason for people who have owned this thing for a long time who don't want to spend money to go back to Street Passing.
And that's
right?
What I think – that's where my question is coming from. It's more of the fact that if you are a consumer who is out in the middle of nowhere and therefore isn't getting a lot of Street Passes, this – there's just no reason for you to try this, you know? And I feel like it, in some ways, if that person or if more people had a device and were urged to Street Pass, I feel like free games would help that.
Sure.
Because there are plenty of games you're already buying that have Street Pass features, and you paid for those games.
Yeah.
So to me, just part of like selling the Street Pass game is a bit shaky ground for me.
Yeah, I think, I mean, the ideal solution would be to give one away for free and then charge for the others. Mm. I mean, people who don't find Street Passers can always play the shaky, shaky, shaky game, right? Like to rack up coins and then invite characters
shaky,
in.
Shaky, shaky, shaky game. I like
The other factor with the Street Pass games is just like whether they outwear their welcome after you've done the same kind of intro task 100 times, right? Yeah. Like that's my feeling with some of the other games where I'm like, oh, God, I don't want to have to do this for 10 characters. Hold down the shoulder button, and it goes marginally faster. They do let you skip, for example, in the angling game, the fishing game. You get to skip the kind of like the boat animation sequence if you hit a button. Mm-hmm. But it's still, you know, it still is that fussy thing that where they're a little bit too proud of all their characters marching up and doing their little bow and all that, and you have to wait for it. cute for the first 20 times, and then you're like, oh, just let me hit.
Yeah, skip. No, absolutely. And yeah. I think that part of it, like, Find Me eventually mm-hmm. wore me down because it was inevitably sort of a lot of the same, and a lot of those tasks were unskippable, mm-hmm. or at least they felt so at the time. I'm not sure if now, with some of these updates, if those have been changed.
Yeah, and you can now remove those games from your home screen, too, mm-hmm. right? Like, they gave you more controls over it. The VIP room seems a bit confounding. I actually paid for that, but only because it exists, and I need to tell you whether it sucks or not.
Okay, yeah, like, I'm also buying it as well.
It's just, you know.
It seems strange as an additional purchase as well. Like, it almost makes you wish Nintendo was a little more open to, I don't know, Facebook or something like that. Just integration with platforms where you already have a friends list.
Yeah, it's very much targeted at the super collector, right? Like, the guy who gets the Miyamoto Mi and goes, oh, I need to somehow keep that one around, right? Like, it's such a...
Or separate him from the mass of people.
Exactly. It's such a special thing to encounter that character. Let me put them here. Or like, it's really for collectors, but it's a pretty anemic package. So unless you're... I can recommend it to anyone.
Yeah,
actually,
it's something that again works more in Japan than maybe here.
Maybe
Street
that's
Passing
it,
is a lot more, or at least when I was there. I don't know if that's still the case today, but 2 years ago, Street Passing was still you could run into anyone with a 3DS. But that was also right at coincidentally that was around a Monster Hunter launch. So I don't know if these days it's a lot drier.
Very true. But the two games are both solid. I mean, I'm enjoying playing them. So
okay.
I'll keep on. I went back to Street Passing, so it definitely worked for me.
Well, I went back to Mario Kart 8. And let me tell you, there's a lot of reasons to go back to Mario Kart 8 these days. I can think of a DLC pack that's pretty cool. I can think of a 200cc that is, I believe, a free update for everyone. You didn't have to own the DLC to get 200cc. I will say, and we've talked about this before on this show, 200cc is insane. It is really fast, and you have to change the way that you play the game,
completely.
Change the way you race in order to really get the most out of it. Like, you have to brake a lot more.
Mm-hmm.
You have to start your turns a lot sooner. If you're on a bike, good luck.
Well, the turns change, right? Like, I was just playing a level where you take one jump, and usually you land before the second one and catch the boost pad, but I jumped clean over it because I was so fast. I'm like, what? You know, like, everything changes. It's, I mean, it's such a simple idea, and it's so freaking smart.
Okay.
It like really gives you a reason to replay all the levels, and you have to relearn things.
Yep.
And, you know, just really impressive concept.
Yeah, especially for a year after this game came out. It's coming up on a year. Mario Kart has been, you know, a part of our collections or of our gaming libraries. And I will say that I am really impressed by a move like that. I mean, I still feel you have to. It's really punishing at times, and I feel almost like, wow, like I don't know if I'm going to stick with this. Like, is this worth getting the 3 stars per cup, which is always a bragging right? Right? For anyone who's really, really, really super into Mario Kart, they go for those 3 stars. It's almost a mini form of an achievement, you would say, even though it's one that's a bit more personal because you don't broadcast it everywhere. That's really surprising me for it. That's it. So we just had a live stream you guys should check out on IGN where we play 200cc for a majority of them.
How did that work out?
I did terrible the minute I got on a bike. So when we played the first cup, the Mushroom Cup, I crushed. Like, there was one race where I fell apart. I think it was Sweet Sweet Canyon. But the rest of it, Thwomp Ruins, Mario Circuit, and I'm forgetting the name of the second course on that track, but regardless, or cup. But I was doing fine because you have to start your drifts earlier. And as long as you're doing that, those courses don't have a lot of twists and turns that are too unforgiving, except Sweet Sweet Canyon. There are definitely a lot of like tighter turns there.
Did you discover any new shortcuts and like adapt to them?
I'm not really great at the shortcut game. Yeah, okay. I still need some time for that. I know Brendan Graber has a video up on IGN right now that has a bunch of shortcuts in it. So anyone who's interested in seeing how the physics now change, because you're absolutely right. You go off of one ramp, and where there was a series of ramps, you're clear over like all of them on your way out.
Everything was different, because you get so used to your game and how you play a level. And of course, this game does a good job at kind of tossing something in your way, and you have to adapt on the fly.
Mm-hmm.
But this is just relearning the entire track because you do have to brake.
Yep.
And I don't know, I have to play a little bit more with some of the maybe the lighter cards or something just to see how I adjust it.
So
but,
online, that seems to be the advice, go with a lighter character because the heavies just don't handle it so well.
Yeah.
Baby Park at 200cc, oh my God.
But by the way, even at 150cc, I was playing with my kids who know that track so well.
Baby Park.
Yes.
Okay.
From the previous game, right? Mm-hmm. And they rejoiced when they saw it because they just love the visuals, whatever. And then they're like, oh my God, it's so fast. But we were playing on 150cc, which they've played, you know, 1,000 times in Mario Kart 8. But just having that same track now in this game, you realize what an upgrade it is.
Well, it's a 7-lap race, which is also something you kind of quietly don't realize. That you're like, man, how many times have we gone around?
Yeah, yeah.
And then you realize seven?
Yeah.
Seven times? But it is absolutely rad. Yeah,
those
cool.
New and old tracks. F-Zero. Seeing F-Zero in Mario Kart represented this way, like, oh, so blue actually means water. I mean, it has a water slide portion to it.
Mm-hmm.
Ah, it's so good.
Yeah.
What a great content package. So if you are an owner of Mario Kart 8 and you haven't downloaded the add-ons, what are you waiting for?
Yeah, seriously, you're missing
really
out on some really good tracks, some really good courses. They all feel really good. I haven't seen a single new track that I go, I don't want to play that.
They're pretty. Yeah. And then, the attention to detail. We talked about that from the trailer impressions, but now when you play it, like the villager going when he gets hurt, right?
Like
it has all the little moments and like sound effects and like you know, the apples falling from the trees, and
absolutely.
It's so good.
Yeah, yeah, no, there's definitely a lot to love in them. Definitely suggest you check them out. Someone asked on the stream about what this spells for the future of F-Zero. At all, if anything, like is this a sign that F-Zero is coming? I don't think it necessarily is. I think Nintendo is just very aware how much people like F-Zero, or at least want another game. The fans that are out there who absolutely do want one. I feel that 200cc is a step closer, but it does not replace F-Zero because the rules are different. F-Zero is such a hardcore game. GX is one of the most skillful racers yet made. Like, you have to really know exactly how to it's almost as technical as a driving simulator.
Yeah,
like it's super super hardcore, and even though it's designed as an arcade racer.
Yeah, and the original was very much a the original was very much focused on racing and didn't really have any weapons or anything. You know, they add the spin with 64, which added a little bit more of an offensive element. Sure, you could bump into people before that anyway.
Yeah,
but I thought. I'm curious to see if Mario Kart 8 serves actually as an impetus to bring back F-Zero, because even the Nintendo team's gotta have a blast playing that track, you know, and like hearing
both
the music, and like maybe they'll have the kind of maybe they'll also add a little bit more of an action element to it to make it sell to people who aren't just into pure racing. We'll see.
And I purely think that's the reason why we haven't seen an F-Zero, and I've said that before on the show. The idea that they just haven't landed on what the next cool thing could be to either make that game more accessible or make it something that people are not just the same thing. Like, it can't just be F-Zero GX again. I know some people really want that. That game is hard as heck.
Game is that's an amusement vision game. Like, Nintendo would not make that same game. You know?
They wouldn't.
Like, just like they wouldn't do a Metroid like the last one.
But just like that, Brian Altano
is
you here.
Guys,
where have you been?
I was shooting a quick Star Wars video for IGN. They had me doing a lot of those these days because Star Wars is a big thing.
Star Wars is a big thing.
And
you
nice
just got back
coffee.
From Star Wars Celebration. Why don't you talk a little bit about that before we go into Brian Altano's five Nintendo E3 2015 predictions.
I just jump in and got to go on the spot like that.
No, not yet.
Star Wars Celebration was great. It was one of my favorite shows I've ever ever worked.
Yeah, I'm jealous too.
You guys should go next year. It's in London next year.
That's really convenient.
Yeah, it's super convenient. I'm just going to jump on a plane.
It's not Anaheim.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It was actually a really interesting, magical time to be there because the new Star Wars trailer had just hit that morning. Then they opened up the show floor, and everyone was just excited. Like, they were just. It was a lot of happiness in the air, which I don't think you get. I think you get excitement and happiness at gaming conventions, but there's also a lot of doubt and cynicism and negativity. And there's a lot of sort of like, I saw the demo, but the frame rate wasn't good, or the graphics weren't great. Or, you know, it's a lot of kind of 18 to 35 year old adult males who are angry about something.
Mm-hmm.
That's a blanket statement, I know.
Yeah.
But I feel like Star Wars Celebration, I think calling something a celebration really does. I mean, it's sort of like being like, are we going to a housewarming or are we going to a party? Mm-hmm. Like, we're going to a party. Okay, let's party then. Like, if E3 was called Video Game Celebration, I think it would be a totally different show. You know, I think if PAX was called Penny Arcade Celebration and not Exposition or Convention. Like, these are just kind of words.
But being, like, a lifelong Star Wars fan, that is the ultimate convention to go to. Were you at any panels? Like,
No, I was actually at most – I was almost 100% on the show floor, just walking around talking to people and shooting videos and checking out exhibits and show like people there was a tattoo pavilion. I think they should have called it Tatooine. They didn't, though. Totally missed the ball.
Nice.
There were just like action figures everywhere, old ones, new ones, stuffed animals, toys, like all sorts of posters and artwork and artists.
Any of the games on sale, the older games?
Yeah, there were definitely some games there. But in terms of video games, there was that one you played, the arcade game.
Battle Pod. I was thinking about that. That was there.
Yeah.
And oh, it's such a good game.
I think someone said they wanted to buy it, and it's. I think the game cost. Take a guess.
$30,000.
It's $30,000.
Someone who works here may have text Pear frantically saying, "We need one for the office, please."
Was that
after
you?
He played it.
Was that you?
Perhaps. And the answer.
May have not found enough money to pay.
Yeah.
For
someone
that
said,
particular
"Heck no!"
Thing.
Do you know how much it costs? And he sent me the price.
How much does it cost to play?
Not 30,000, I'll say that.
is it a dollar game?
So I played at Dave & Buster's where you buy a card and you swipe. Right. So I don't remember I don't know. Remember what the exact exchange rate was, because that's how they get you.
That's editor money.
There's editor money. More like, let's not talk about poverty on the podcast. I'm kidding. No, but I'm serious. Like, Dave & Buster's does this strange conversion rate where you're not entirely sure. It's kind of like a Microsoft points, remember?
Yeah.
You didn't know what the dollar to Microsoft points were, like even Bill Gates had to tell you.
You know, like there's a like Star Wars has a very rich history with video games, and that's continuing with Battlefront, which, you know, the demo we saw looks really cool. But it also got me really kind of oddly nostalgic for the N64 Star Wars game, Shadows of the Empire.
Yeah.
Which is not a great game.
It's really clunky.
It's very clunky, but I still played a lot of it. And I think it was incredibly ambitious for the time to have to kind of jump from space battles to on foot stuff to speeder bike stuff.
It's the first 3D battle of Hoth that blew us all away.
And you know what? I still maintain that the snow speeder feels better than the snow speeder in the later games. Mm-hmm. In the Factor 5 games, I feel like the Shadows of the Empire one, the snow speeder feels great. The first person shooter, like on foot elements, are really hokey and kind of crap.
Yeah, they're not very good.
And like the train sequence was annoying. Like the IG-88, like Home
Yeah, that was
one,
a really bad
But it was
level,
the advent of like home console 3D and stuff. Yeah. Everyone was just like, this was the best thing that we had at the time.
And then the sound clips were super short.
Yeah. One of the things I really did like about it was it dipped into some of the comic books and some of the side stuff for its characters. Like the main protagonist was Dash Rendar, and he has that weird it's like he's Han Solo, but even more of a dick.
Yeah. Yeah.
And he's got a Millennium Falcon that's kind of like even
the Outrider.
That wonky looking Millennium Falcon.
Got a little model of it.
Yeah. And it was cool to see, like, you know, people had copies of that game on the show floor. And it was like, I remember getting that N64 box and bringing it home.
Wasn't brand new, like sealed copies?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, wow. That's so cool.
My favorite thing is on his Facebook page, Brian posted a picture of him and Max hanging out in the cantina, like on the set. And I made a snarky comment saying, like, oh, I remember this scene, the short one. I didn't say fat one. Short one gets his arm cut off. Making a joke. And then the next day he posts a picture of him as Walrus Man. He actually dressed up as Walrus Man.
Yeah, we got to go backstage at the Cantina set at the StarWars.com live show. And they said, "Did you guys want to be Cantina aliens?" And I'm like, "Sure." And they're like, "Who do you want to be?" And I'm like, "Well, I love Ponda Baba, you know, who's the guy. He's got the butt cheek chin. And he's got those bug eyes."
Yeah.
And they're like, "Oh, Walrus Man. And I'm like, "Sure." So they go, "Okay, well, you're going to be Walrus Man after he lost an arm." And I'm like, "Oh, all right. Well, what does that mean?" And they're like, "So we're going to put on this costume and we have to strap your arm behind your back. And we're going to put on these heavy boots and heavy shirt and heavy jacket. And we're going to put a wolf hand on your left hand. And we're going to put this rubber mask over your head that you can't see out of almost at all. Like 99% no vision. So my arm, the jacket I'm wearing is actually severed right here. And there's this bloody stump. And then my face is completely obscured. And I'm wearing all these heavy clothes. And they walk me backstage to this cantina set. And they sit me down, and I can't see, and I'm breathing. I'm just like,
and it's hot. I can't see the
bar. In character.
Yeah, I'm in character. And the bartender comes over to me and starts talking to me in some language I don't understand. And I'm like, this is the closest Spanish I've ever felt to like getting kidnapped. Like, I don't understand what's going on.
Speaking Spanish.
Yeah, she's speaking Spanish. And they hand me a drink that I can't drink because I'm wearing a mask. Or I'm just like, and I'm just babbling. Uh-huh. And after 15 minutes,
I don't like you either.
Yeah, I don't like you either.
That's his buddy, right?
Yeah. After 15 minutes, they go, you can go. And they take off the mask. I'm like,
yeah.
And they pull my arm back out and they take me backstage, take off the wolf hand, and I come up back upstairs.
How long were you in that?
About a half an hour total, I was in this costume.
Oh, wow. Good Lord.
It was fun.
Yeah, it was definitely, I definitely have a
reason. It looked so good.
Yeah.
All of the stuff looked good. I mean,
most
all the
of it was there to begin with.
No, but. Yeah, I got that. Yeah. Max, as one of the band players, was pretty good.
Yeah.
That's basically what he looks like, too.
Okay. Yeah.
No, but there were so many cool models and sets. I mean, you guys freaked out over Life Size Rancor.
Yeah. Right? Just a lot of the AT-AT on the floor.
Yeah, that looked great.
Seeing what my favorite thing was just the children, like really happy kids everywhere, which you don't get it. At
especially after those prequels.
Well, the younglings.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, the interesting thing about the children is that they don't have that point of reference that we do, that the prequels are bad. It's like we grew up, we watched those, we hated them, and then they just grew up, and that was normal to them to be like, these are children's movies.
Right.
I think a lot of them get it now, but to see children buying Star Wars action figures and dressing up as Star Wars characters, it's just really special to me.
I'm actually really curious about that, how opinion of the movie shifts, like whether in the future people will not see the huge difference between them, or maybe the younger generation is like, oh, those are cheesy, but these are better.
Yeah.
Like, it's going to be interesting to see all this.
It is going to be interesting to see how that plays out.
And it, like, one final note is like, it did kind of bum me out that I went home and I was like, what, you know, where can I play Star Wars on my Nintendo consoles now? And like, outside of like Lego Star Wars,
The old Super Nintendo games, I don't believe they're on virtual console.
I don't think so.
I don't think they were on Wii, but someone should double check. Like, definitely leave us a note or send
an email. And they're really good games. Like, I mean, if you have, if you're in a Star Wars and you're a Nintendo fan, like, hunt down the Super Nintendo games. Like, those Super Star Wars is really awesome.
I have that one.
Difficult.
I have the prototype of Return of the Jedi.
Really?
Yeah, wow. I have the old.
Whoa,
ROM
spoke
of it.
Too soon. It was on virtual console August 2009. So you can still get it on Wii.
Oh, interesting.
In North America and in Europe, also 2009, that's Super Star Wars. So you should definitely look into that if you still want to go into Wii mode.
Yeah. It doesn't have the Darth Vader scorpion, but it has scorpions on Tatooine,
too.
That's
right.
Yeah.
Oh, man, I remember that Sandcrawler level where you'd fall down again and again.
Yeah.
I'm like,
Empire Strikes Back and just...
So
and it's,
evil.
It's such a silly thing to point out, but the level where you were actually driving the Millennium Falcon through the asteroid field, my inner child came out screaming.
I mean,
I love that scene. Like, that was such a cool scene for Han because it shows off him as a pilot for the first time. I feel like in first Star Wars movie, you see that.
Yeah.
So having that moment where it's like, we can still outmaneuver them.
All the Mode 7 stuff, like the Land Speeder one blew my mind, too, when I saw that one, in the first one.
That whole inner child thing was sort of, it's been kind of like the running theme of the last, 8 days for a lot of us who saw the new Star Wars trailer and for me who went to Celebration. And I feel like there were two running themes with my childhood growing up, and that was Nintendo and Star Wars. And Star Wars has been dormant for so long. And Nintendo I get to talk about with you guys all the time.
Yeah.
So it was cool to kind of bring that side of it out. But
definitely.
This is a Nintendo podcast, so let's get into
it. We'll go back to that. I do want to end, though, on that the publisher for the Star Wars games on Super Nintendo was JVC, later released by THQ.
Oh, interesting.
And then the last, basically the rights holder is LucasArts, who no longer exists.
Yeah.
Now, I hope deep down somewhere, someone at Nintendo who listens to this podcast will go, this would be cool that when these movies come out,
something
leading up to it, like just put those out again. And like, those are good games.
Now is absolutely
the time. Virtual console, I'm pretty sure there are a lot of people who would gladly go back to those
for
games.
For sure.
Yep.
Yeah.
And you were going to point something out before.
No, I was going to move on to the little Jose present, since you were talking about
there's
rediscovering.
There's a Jose present?
There's a little Jose present.
Yeah, I don't even know what that is.
Yeah, no, so, you talked a lot about how the Amiibo race was losing you, right?
Okay, yeah.
And so Ben Fisk from the NVC Amiibo group on Facebook wants to make a final appeal saying, Jose, don't drop out yet. He sent you a gold Mario.
Wow. Dude,
this is a gold Mario. So this is live. I did not know this was at all. He didn't tell me.
That's awesome.
I noticed he came in with a box. Why does Mario look cross-eyed? no, thank you so much. Ben?
Yeah.
Ben, thank you so much. I'm looking at this right now for the first time, and this is amazing. I don't think...
So that's the one you didn't get, right?
It is the one I didn't get. So and I have to just really quickly address this. There have been a lot of folks on Twitter asking me or trying to get me to, like, hey, do you need one? I can grab you one. I kind of don't always feel appropriate, like, accepting those things. Uh-huh. And I appreciate the lengths to which people are willing to go. In Ben's case, I have no way to say no at this point.
Exactly. That's why he sent
it
to me.
You're holding it.
Yeah, I'm holding it, so I guess I own it now.
But furthermore, and I think the bigger thing here is you're back, aren't you?
Oh, I don't know, man. I don't know. But see, I really appreciate the gift. I will think about it.
I feel like that plugs the gap, and now you're complete again, so you have to go after the next wave.
I'm not complete. I don't have a single pre-order on the last one. I have a friend who is coming through with Ness, and that's it. But Ben, I will reconsider my position. Thank you so much for sending this over. And nice surprise. I will say that. That was really cool.
Are you going to open it?
I like
no.
that. Don't
no.
open it.
Absolutely not. No, I'm going to keep it in the box with the rest of them.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's how we work. All right, so we're going to take a quick break. But when we come back, Brian Altano is going to bring you his 5 Nintendo E3 2015 predictions. Don't you go anywhere. Otero here with Brian Altano and Per Schneider, and to kick things off, my man Brian Altano is going to give you his 5 Nintendo E3 2015 predictions. Last week's show, Per and I traded some. Marty Sliva was a guest on the show, also gave us some of his. Okay. So Brian, paint me a picture.
Well, we gave you a lot of time to prep for this.
Yeah.
At least three minutes.
3 minutes.
Yeah. Maybe a little.
So these are going to be amazing.
So this is a hybrid between what I want and what I hope. Because I think if it were what I know is – what I think is going to happen is very different than what I dream will happen, right?
Well, Brian, let's be fair. Predictions for Nintendo are pretty much like you just throw – stuff at the wall.
Mario,
to see
Zelda, Star
Fox. No, but I mean in terms of that, you can't always predict what they're going to throw out there.
Like I never would have guessed Amiibo a few years ago. I never would have guessed like the Animal Crossing House Arrest Edition, any of those things. So one thing I want to see, and I'm actually hoping we'll see, and I'm getting a good feeling about, is a new entry in the Punch-Out franchise. And I don't think that means a dedicated Punch-Out game, but I do think it means something new pertaining to Little Mac and his wily gang of
Coyotes?
Overtly racist friends.
Stereotypes.
Well, they're not racist. They're stereotypes.
Yeah.
I don't know what that's going to be. I have a feeling like we'll see something for Wii U, and I think it'll be a downloadable game.
Yep.
I don't think that they would go full-fledged retail for Punch-Out these days, because I don't think it has the same... I think they played that nostalgia card once a couple years ago with Punch-Out for Wii, which
is
sort of like...
Well, they knocked it out of the park.
And they did a great job.
Games developer, props to you guys. You crushed it.
What are they working on now?
They're working on something for Nintendo that they haven't said. At least a couple of... I think it's been over 6 months or a year ago. Like, they had a statement saying, yep, we are pledged to working with Nintendo on future stuff. That is all. Mm-hmm. And that was it. They've been quiet ever since. I did run into some folks who may work for that studio at a Destiny panel once at GDC, which I thought was curious. But the thing is, at GDC, developers go to all kinds of panels.
Right.
So would that mean they're working on a sci-fi game? I don't
think Destiny's so. Coming to Wii U. Got
it. Yeah, we got it. No, I think it's going to be Punch-Out Cross Final Fight.
That would be fun.
That sounds awesome.
I know. I love making super specific predictions that can never come through. Because if it happens, man, it's like the lotto.
I mean, like a side-scrolling punch-out beat-em-up about
with
Little Mac training would be awesome.
Yeah.
Like, he leaves the boxing gym, and he finds out that the Mad Gear gang has taken over the city and stolen his girlfriend, and he has to beat the crap out of all of them. And
like, pink-haired Princess Peach is attacking.
Why has Final Fight Cross Double Dragon never happened?
I don't know.
They just run on different blocks. Different sides of town.
Yeah, different sides.
They're two interpretations of the same story.
Pretty much.
Yeah, and it's
you can't merge the universes.
It's like Billy and Jimmy Lee, they don't want to hang out with the mayor.
They're in high school. True. They want to like smoke cigarettes behind the gym.
Okay.
Number two, and this is a weird one because it goes to something bigger, but I predict that they'll announce and show a Legend of Zelda amiibo set, a dedicated one. Now, you're probably saying, but amiibos have to work with games. So I think they will work with the game, but it won't be a new one. I think they'll either patch in existing amiibo support into Majora's Mask in some capacity, or they'll do something with Twilight Princess.
I think the Majora's Mask one, the ship has sailed.
You think
it's done? But I mean, last show, I don't know if you heard my prediction, but I said Zelda Maker. It's going to be a thing.
Yeah.
That'd be cool. So Zelda Amiibo works with Zelda Maker, maybe?
Yeah, I mean, I think we're a long time away from seeing something like that happen. I would love to see Zelda Maker. I mean, that would be fantastic.
I mean, I think as long as you're making dungeons, you're okay. You're not making overworlds. You're not making, Kakariko Village. You're making
It would have to be 2D top-down, right?
We said I said the art styles would be The Legend of Zelda, Link to the Past, A Link Between Worlds, and you could probably throw in four swords somewhere.
Somebody had faked something over the weekend, which was that Twilight Princess Street Pass that someone was playing it on 3DS. Yeah. I know. It's
Skyward Sword, right?
Skyward Sword, right?
No, it was Twilight Princess on 3DS. It was Twilight Princess 3D.
That's what it was. Yeah.
So, I mean, ever since we read about heard about the Zelda delay, I've had this hunch that they're going to put something in place to kind of satiate console Zelda fans for a little while between now and then.
Zelda Maker, believe.
I don't think it's that.
I'm just pushing it.
I hear you.
I think in the meantime, you take something like Twilight Princess or Skyward Sword.
But wouldn't you worry that putting in a Zelda in its place would signal for some people that Zelda Wii U is not for Wii U?
No, I don't think that. I don't think that at all.
That would make me jump to that conclusion.
No, I think it's just
Pear is quietly.
Yeah, I would too.
Yep. I would totally do that. I think you're right in terms of there's another Zelda thing in the works.
Yep.
Okay.
Number three, we'll get Animal Crossing Wii U, and that'll be one of the last big flagship titles for the console. Like in terms of like big, you know, retail sells a lot of units type of thing. That'll be their last big like get on in here and get this console. And I think that. That'll utilize the graphics that we saw in that weird demo thing.
Animal Crossing Plaza.
Yeah.
Waddle,
which was really cool because I just feel like Animal Crossing is constantly in their vernacular, and it's not really something you see a major entry in the series. And I don't think they are doing all this stuff with Animal Crossing tracks in Mario Kart and doing all this stuff with the Animal Crossing amiibo set just to use them for that Animal Crossing House Arrest
version.
Yeah. Mini game. You know, I don't think so.
See, I had the same prediction, but I said that is the take it on the go version that connects with the Wii U version. And like, what if it came to mobile phones and everything? And like, because they never want to tether, I think, Animal Crossing to your home, but they have to with Wii U. That would let you go take it out.
So in Japan, they had a 30-second trailer, like TV commercial, for Mario Kart 8, and it kicks off with Isabelle at a desk, just like basically Animal Crossing, or the way she would deliver something in Animal Crossing. I thought it was incredibly cute, but I also thought, oh my goodness, like, is this another like signal? It probably isn't. It's probably just them reusing assets to make something like that work.
See,
but it still makes you go,
and it's kind of like maybe we're boxing in the dark here, and we're just going like, oh, these are all little symbols and stuff like that, and maybe they're not. But then I look at something like Majora's Mask, and like there's a birdseed trail leading to that game that they hid in a bunch of different things for a while. They were just sort of like, here's a little reference, here's a little nod. Like Link Between Worlds had an actual mask in the shop just sitting there that you could hide behind and wear, basically.
Yeah, it's funny. We asked Aonuma about that, and he was like, yeah, I wasn't really trying to do that, but I guess. Because even like there was like a wallpaper they put out that had a spring background. It was Link wearing, you know, a mask, and it was for 2014 or 15, I don't remember. But anyway, sorry. That's funny, though, the breadcrumb trail. What's next? What do you got?
Number four, I think we're going to see the first glimpse of a Nintendo-partnered or developed mobile game, and it'll be out that day. It'll be like, here's our first mobile game, and you can play it right now.
At E3? Whoa.
And I think it'll just be sort of testing the waters before this entire partnership goes full-fledged and public to everything. But I think they'll be like, we have a mobile game out, and you can play it right now.
Yeah. And that would be earlier than what they're saying. They said not to anticipate until fall. So that would be a nice surprise, I would imagine, if it were that quit soon and that early.
Yeah, and I think it'll be something – it'll be like a Match 3 Pokemon game, or it'll be a WarioWare game, or it'll be something that's sort of like a simplified version of something you can get already, free to play. but it's 100% my prediction. I don't think it'll be a full-fledged Legend of Zelda Mario game, but it will be something like we're sticking a pinky toe in the water today. Mm-hmm. And I don't have a number five.
Number five
is that I'm going to have a really good time, and I'm really excited for Nintendo's E3. Oh, yeah, we'll see Zelda. Even though they said it wasn't going to be there. We will see.
Trailer?
So yeah. you're not going to go to the Square conference?
No.
Ooh, yeah. Did you hear about that?
What does Nintendo have
Enix
to do with that?
Because Square Enix's new E3 conference, I feel like they haven't had one in a long time.
Yeah.
They announced it for Tuesday at 9 a.m.
Yeah.
Which is the time slot Nintendo always has their mm-hmm. conference at. Mm-hmm. So right now, our time is going to be very divided in terms of coverage. And even like from an audience perspective, people who have an interest in whatever Square is showing. I mean, because potentially Square could show Final Fantasy 15. They can show Kingdom Hearts 3. They can show the next Tomb Raider. They can show the next Deus Ex. Like there are some games in there.
Some big stuff.
How does it stack up against a publisher like Nintendo, who also has a cool catalog of potential games they could unveil? I don't know, man. That's rough.
Someone's
got to move.
I mean, for me personally, like I gravitate more towards Nintendo than Square Enix's stuff.
Sure.
But that is a huge crossover of audiences there. So you're going to tear a lot of people in half.
Kingdom Hearts is a big deal, I think, to old school Nintendo fans for sure.
Yeah.
And I mean, I love what I've seen of Final Fantasy. I loved the last Tomb Raider. Mm-hmm. I can't wait. Deus Ex was a great game. You can actually play that on Wii U, right?
Yeah.
That's right. Yeah, that's a good game.
They did publish it there.
Play it if you haven't played it.
Okay.
Yeah, that sucks. I hope they figure out how to get around the issue. Otherwise, we'll have to develop a player for our homepage that has two streams and can switch. Yep.
I do think Nintendo will end their press conference. And this is just me being like just the childish dreamer that I am. But they're going to say, hey, I know we said that we weren't going to show you any more Zelda, but let's just give you a glimpse into the world of Hyrule. And then you'll see like a 30-second thing that's just like, we promise it's still happening. We're still working on it. I know you're excited. See you next year. Goodbye.
Then everyone loses their mind.
Yep.
Just like last year. I like that. They said it's
that was
not
your fifth
be there.
Prediction. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Good job. Nice work.
Sure. Thanks, guys. Thanks for having me.
So let's switch over to the question block then. So every couple of weeks, we dig into the question vault, nvc@ign.com, and we pull out some of your best discussion questions to answer them for at least 4 minutes, if not a little longer, sometimes a little shorter. First question comes from...
We got a ton of questions this time around,
by the way. We got a lot,
yeah. How do people send us questions, Jose?
nvc@ign.com.
That's right.
Yeah, you make sure you email us and
tell
us. Don't send it on Twitter. Don't, you know, do anything else because it probably won't make it on the show. All right, so last year at E3, this comes from Ian. Last year at E3, Nintendo showed off a game called Devil's Third. You guys may remember that.
Yeah.
Since then, we haven't seen anything on this game. Do you think that we will see this game at E3 this year? And could it be a game to convince hardcore gamers without a Wii U to buy the system?
What the heck was Devil's Third again?
We actually unveiled it exclusively on IGN.
Oh, that! Okay, yeah. Okay, got it. In my mind, I was seeing some cutesy like SD game from Japan. No, okay.
Itagaki's game,
not
which
cutesy.
Was supposed to be published by THQ, but they went under, and Nintendo came to the rescue to publish that game.
And then it looked... The early version we saw had some issues, right?
Had some issues,
very
yeah.
choppy.
It
yeah.
looked,
was early.
Yeah, it looked like the transition had just begun for whatever was going on there. And we don't know when the deal sort of happened. I think we asked Itagaki, and he was pretty vague about mm-hmm. the details, about who approached who. That said, though, it is sort of positioned as a hardcore multiplayer action game.
Mm-hmm. That's interesting.
Yeah.
I think we're going to see it at E3 then. I hadn't even thought about that game. Jeez.
I think we're going to see it at E3, but I don't know if it really went over all that well when it was shown.
Yeah, I mean, I would assume that if we don't see it at E3, it's probably canceled or scrapped because it's a year is a long time to go without hearing about a game that was pretty, not done, but pretty close to being, I mean, it was built enough to be showable.
But they do have to work in that, you know, TLC to get it to run on Wii U, which means it has to use a gamepad or at least factor that in as one of the places where information is getting displayed. Like, did that change the game design at all?
I would be more concerned that they're looking at sales numbers on stuff like Bayonetta and they're going, is this worth it? Like, I mean, that game did not move the needle at all.
Yeah. But it was basically done, right? And so from an acquisition perspective, it's probably better to release it.
Well,
especially, you know, they can always do it pretty cost effectively as a downloadable.
Yeah. And in Bayonetta's case, regardless of the commercial aspect of it, I mean, critically, that game got a bunch of attention, a lot of positive scores, a crazy like action ride for what it's worth. But with Devil's Third, I'm not entirely sure it's going to convince hardcore gamers to buy the system, just because there have been plenty of like hardcore or gritty games, I feel, that came before. Not plenty. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's not a plentiful in the sense that there have been many, but the ones that have were from a hardcore perspective, and ultimately no one, or at least that we know of, not a lot of people really bought in because of that.
I think Zombie U was a good example where, you know, it didn't end up selling.
Or Batman.
I want to replay that game, by the way.
Yeah.
I really enjoyed that game.
Yeah,
The last Batman Arkham game, mm-hmm. Bayonetta. You know, I mean, there is a small, but Deus Ex.
Yeah, Assassin's Creed Black Flag, which is amazing, didn't sell well either on the Wii U.
Yeah, yeah, I mean, I think
Call of Duty has gone home.
I think a lot of those were ports, and they were old ports too. Mm-hmm. So it was sort of hard to move the needle on those things.
For sure. But, absolutely.
It's rarely one game that gets people to go, I'm going to walk into the store and buy this console. It's a library. And, you know, it's never just Devil's Third. It's Devil's Third, fourth, fifth, sixth, and 17 other games are the ones that people go, yeah, I can get into this. And it's the prospect of knowing that more games like that are coming in the future. So
I think it's going to show.
Yeah, I think it shows. I think it'll show. I think if it doesn't show, then we absolutely know something's wrong.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. So it does show. And even if it doesn't show during the presentation, it is at E3. I would be willing to bet that much.
That's actually that would make more sense to me, that it's not in their direct or whatever.
Yeah, in the what do they call it again? The E3 digital event.
Yeah, but it's on the show floor.
Look, I mean, Itagaki, you can't accuse him of having games that are ugly usually. Mm-hmm. You know, like he's overseen a bunch of games that, you know, like I'm not the biggest fan because I love my cameras to be a little tighter. Mm-hmm. Like his games are very difficult too, which can be frustrating to me.
Yeah,
but I have a feeling they're going to clean that sucker up from last year, and it's going to look pretty presentable by now.
When his games are made with hardcore gamers in mind, too. I mean, they're very hardcore mechanically.
Yeah.
So let's see. And ultimately, that space of the action game is so... I mean, say what you want about whether Bayonetta performed or not. Like, they absolutely nailed how control should be done in an action game. They absolutely did.
And to be fair, Bayonetta 2 sold better on Wii U than it would have sold... never being made at all,
because
it almost was never made at all.
Yeah.
So, and I got to play it. So.
I mean, the good news with Bayonetta is, like, I think Platinum and Nintendo had another chance to get closer together again, and I'm sure that's going to result in a Platinum-made game for the Wii U.
Yep.
So, looking forward to that.
Just a matter of time. All right, next question comes from Chris Peters in the UK, and he says, I'm a weekly listener, loves the show. So, what does Nintendo... need to do to add value? What does Nintendo do to add value to all of the amiibo that are out in the wild? Here I mean actual value, not a skin in Mario Kart or a weapon in Hyrule Warriors, but something tangible and enjoyable. And then it goes on to talk about how there is, firstly, there is no real use of amiibo in line with Disney or Skylanders. You know, we've talked about that a lot on the show. Secondly, I buy amiibo because I like characters, but it would be great if they did something more. And there will be 50 of them out when the Smash run is complete. And they can't just be figures I'm buying to put on my shelf, which is absolutely a valid argument,
sure.
I believe.
Trying to buy.
Lastly, his preferred situation would be something like Mario Maker. You can scan your amiibo in and you can play as Samus or Pit, etc. Or a Nintendo 3D platformer. We have the Nintendo Kart Racer and Brawler. Why not a 3D platformer encompassing a multitude of characters? So the Mario Maker idea, I do think it's cool, but I do think the more characters you put in tied behind amiibo, first of all, the more work that takes for game, because those characters basically aren't made to really work with a Mario game, or with at least in my opinion. Like, I feel like Mario Maker is very pure in what it sets out to be. It's sort of this, I don't know, this... this amalgamation of 30 years of platforming and Mario and Nintendo, and I just don't think that a lot of those other characters really fit.
You're also having to make them five times over or four times over for each art style in the game.
Yeah,
you know,
like,
and that's.
And I will say, after playing Amiibo Tap Nintendo Greatest Bits, I don't think that's the good answer
either.
That's
not the answer either.
Yeah, I tried it.
It came out in Japan, so you tried the Japanese version.
Tried it out. You can find a Let's Play, Let's Plays.
It's out April 30th here in America.
We got that press release today. Yep, and in the UK, I think around the same timing as well. And unlocking demos of games that came out 20 plus years ago is just not it. I'm sorry. Like, it didn't do much for me at all. And it's funny because you made that argument. I was like, maybe it is cool. I played it. I was like, ugh. This wasn't for me. There's someone who it's for. It's definitely not myself.
Yeah,
how do they add value to Amiibo?
Yeah, I mean, I do think that they need a game that pulls together the universe of Amiibo, Skylanders, Disney Infinity. Those games show that it's possible to keep expanding a game experience like that. You know, they obviously release add-on packs when they have multiple figures and all that stuff. Lego is going to do it, right? Mm-hmm. I don't know. I mean, like, if it would be so wonderful if it was a team up with Traveler's Tales, by the way, to do a Lego game in the Nintendo universe and the mm-hmm. Amiibo were unlocking characters. Like, mm-hmm. that kind of gameplay, like a simple game where swapping out the characters adds new powers but doesn't fundamentally change everything about the game would be a good solution.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Other stuff like Nintendo Land, right, where characters compete against each other like they do in Smash Brothers, and maybe Mario has a Fire Flower and Samus has a Blaster, but they all have different powers. Like a game like that as a center point, like a battle game, would be a cool.
So you brought up to me even something when you caught me leaving the Let's Play room, or right before we mm-hmm. recorded the Amiibo Tap Nintendo Greatest Bits Let's Play, where you said, you even thought like adding it that if you scan them in, you have this character walking around your plaza.
Yeah,
was of more interesting use than what the game was doing. Yeah. Ultimately itself.
Yeah, I thought like being able to customize the face of your Wii U, basically, right? Like I don't pay attention to any of the Mii's walking around now because they're meaningless to me, right? Yeah, right. Like,
and it's a like, sterile environment yeah. with no yeah. personality whatsoever. Yeah, it was odd.
It was very cool at the beginning when you saw it grow, and now it's kind of static. And so mm-hmm. just scanning a new Amiibo and like seeing them do funny stuff on the screen could be a cool little hook.
I like that a lot.
But no, I gotta think Amiibo is successful enough for Nintendo to really think about what the game is that pulls it all together.
Yeah, and it's coming. It's just not here yet. And in the meantime, we're going to get this little drips of things like Amiibo Tap mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. Weird support like, you know, Captain Toad, like little things like that, which I'm actually okay with, just little bonuses here and there, unlocking mm-hmm. skins and levels and stuff. Yeah. But it's coming. It's definitely out of the way.
And it could be something like Wii Sports, you know, where honestly, like you play the game, you got all your Mii characters. The moment you add an Amiibo, you get to play as that character. And if not.
Yeah.
Right? This
wasn't in my predictions, but I think for sure we'll see some idea of what that is at E3. And we'll probably see it out by the end of the year.
So in hindsight, I can't help but have a lot more admiration and slight respect for the way they approached Amiibo in Smash, because it still felt like an original idea. Even if you're mm-hmm. even if you're training a bot yeah. who is going to just retain a couple of moves, and you can then take that bot to your friend's house and ultimately have them fight, I feel it's a much better application than, say, a weapon in Hyrule Warriors or, yeah. you know, you liked hide and seek in Captain Toad.
Yeah, have you tried that?
Yeah,
I did.
Yeah, you
but
didn't
I
want to like
hear.
It?
I was lukewarm on it. Like, I thought okay. it was cool, but I wasn't entirely.
Do you not like the feature of looking for Toad, or do you not like the concept of swiping a dongle?
Think. No, I want to hear what you both
think. So the reason I like it was because I beat that game, and then I went back and I collected everything, and mm-hmm. then that game went on the shelf forever, basically. Yep. And that gave me an excuse to not only revisit it, but revisit it and look at each level in a new light, which mm-hmm. I kind of liked, was all of a sudden, like, let's go back into those stages. You've beaten them. You've collected everything in them. You've 100%ed this game. Now go back and find something new in each stage. Mm-hmm. And I thought that was like an interesting little challenge in terms of, like, you know, it wasn't a full-fledged DLC pack and like here's new levels and yeah. stuff like that, but it did give me an excuse to go back to a game that I really enjoyed, and it didn't cost me a penny, so yeah. that's kind of cool.
Yeah, I liked it too.
And ultimately the hunt for yeah. Toad, I guess, was a way to, you know, once you find him, that's it. You've cleared the requirement,
yeah.
which is ultimately what it's there for.
Which was it was another stamp on each page in the book, which was cool. And I thought there was some clever implementation. Like, maybe if you only played the first few stages, you were like, well, this is pretty derivative. But the more you get going, there's actually – it's really clever where they hide him. And it's you know, obviously that's like a game for children, is hide and seek, is poking something on the screen when you see it. But it was very smart. Like, you would see him in the back corner of a level hopping around in lava like, wah, wah. and you'd grab them. Like, it was a cool little thing to just kind of throw in there.
I guess I am a victim of, the first couple I tried, I was just there like, this is okay, but mm-hmm. it's not ultimately grabbing me. Would I have preferred, you know, like new levels or something? Yeah, it's nice to want things. You know, like everyone mm-hmm. everyone ultimately jumps to that conclusion yeah. and wants something more. I just felt slightly underwhelmed.
I felt it was actually, I thought it was oddly satisfying to take that Toad Amiibo, tap it to my gamepad, see the 8-bit Toad run across the screen, jump into a level, and then go find him.
Even the 20th or 30th
Yeah. Every single time it felt like, you know, I was like accomplishing something.
With and think about how you feel if you weren't as dialed in with, you know, media and you didn't know exactly what Toad unlocked. Like, as a kid, getting a notification on your Wii U saying, like, hey, this game now supports Amiibo, and like swiping Toad and seeing that surprise and discovery, I think is really cool.
Yeah.
Sure. All right.
Yeah. I dug it. I thought it was cute.
Fair enough. Okay. Any other ideas to add before we switch over to Alan?
It's kind of tough to predict what Nintendo does, right? Like, they've surprised us so many times with different games. Like, you know, I got to think Amiibo have so much life left. The moment you even like think about Pokemon or Pokken Fighter or any of these games coming out, right? You think about Amiibo and how they would be integrated. So it's kind of tough to take a stab at even like guessing what they're going to do with this when they design a game from scratch for it.
Yeah.
But well, I think we all think they are going to do that.
Yeah, we believe that 100%. Game's coming. So it's just a matter of when it gets shown. And hopefully our expectations are not wrong. All right. So next question comes from Alan Pun. Alan says, my question this week is regarding how you treat the original review of a game after a major addition. Not something like adding a character or two to Smash Bros., but the introduction of 200cc to Mario Kart 8. This mode adds a dynamic change as the leap from 150cc to 200cc is significantly different than from going to 50cc to 150. For example, also because Mario Kart is a very core-centric game, would you consider doing a re-review including the DLC content? So, Alan, as the reviewer for that game, I think the 9.0 still stands. And I want to explain why. Because, yes, 200cc definitely adds a new fun way to play, and I don't think it changes the recommendation at all, right? On IGN, a 9.0 is an amazing game.
Yeah.
And in no way, shape, or form is Mario Kart 8 anything less than an amazing game. But I will say that the state of battle mode, the state of the online, and how sort of difficult it is to arrange a match with friends – and sort of the limitations there were what held back the original review.
Mm-hmm.
I don't feel that 200cc necessarily addresses those changes. It just adds another fun mode to that mix. So for me, as the person who you know put my name on that thing, I feel like ultimately it's great. It's fun. If it were to change that review, it's probably a fraction of a point, but I still very much stand by it. It's a 9.0.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, I think the content releases, now they're sold separately and like, you know, we're not going to re-review the game based on the DLC that is potentially available, mm-hmm. right? Like, when we actually do review story-driven DLC, so when like a game like The Witcher or Assassin's Creed gets a full story edition, we review that as a product, you know, that you can add on to your game and as a standalone. But with track packs, it's really, really difficult to do that. But, you know, I think we've done this a few times now where we give our recommendation that you pick those extra tracks up.
Yeah.
They make Mario Kart 8 a better game when you have them because you have even more variety, right?
But not to the... They wonder better game in terms of score.
Yeah.
What do you think?
If it's hard to tell, right? Like, I mean, first of all, we can't review a game based on all the stuff you could potentially add on to it. Like, that gets really complicated, I think, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, you got to review the game, and then you can give separate recommendations for the add-ons.
Kind of one of the reasons that free-to-play reviews are so hard.
Yeah, but, I mean, given all the stuff that's in it, for me, if I was a reviewer, the whole package would definitely go up in value. Mm-hmm. You know, all those tracks, all those characters, the nostalgia factor of Zelda, like, if you had discovered that in the game and unlocked this track and said, holy crap, there's a Zelda track in it, I do think you would have probably walked away saying, man, this is a step up from the previous games as far as, like, surprises and everything went, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. So I do think it's a case-by-case basis,
though, for sure.
But I don't think this is a case where it necessarily changes much.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not to knock what the value that comes with it. I mean, 200cc was a huge surprise. I told you guys on the show, I thought it was a joke.
Mm-hmm.
I thought it was the end of Nintendo's April Fool's Direct. And I'm like, well, there we go. There's your April Fool's joke. Here it is, 200cc.
Yeah, I think it's less, the 200cc is less of the bigger deal than four new cups over the last 6 months or whatever it was.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's kind of the bigger, that's adding more value to the package, like you said. But I don't know if that moves the number anywhere, because I feel like it's continuing to do what the game set out to do. We don't genuinely judge games based on how much content
they
have.
Yeah, it's not a checklist on, oh, 14 levels equals an extra X points, right?
We don't start with, like, we don't start with 100 and then move the number down based on how few things they have or whatever, mm-hmm. how many things they have. And we don't do the same thing when new things are added. Mm-hmm. But I think that the number stays the same because the game is continuing to do what it set out to do, and it did that well at the gate. When we review games at IGN, we judge them based on how well they're doing what they're trying to do.
And I think re-reviews and score changes are absolutely in order if something fatal gets fixed or something gets changed that really changes the experience, right? Mm-hmm. Like, where our review wouldn't even be the same. Minecraft's a great example. Yeah. Reviewing the original mobile review of Minecraft, which wasn't even the full game, you had to re-review it once they updated it. And they added all these factors. Whereas, like, you know, adding a few ocelots or something to Minecraft is not going to fundamentally change the package and the value of the package. Yeah. But imagine you reviewed a game and you said, this game is so easy, I'm just not enjoying it.
So with our original review, battle mode was one of the things we brought up, and that was never addressed through a DLC. Had that been slightly addressed through a DLC, I think you could have made the argument, absolutely, we have to then revisit a review for it. Or look at the limited communication, the limited way that you'd... I'm better off sending a text message than I am trying to use the in-game system to set up a match. Like, that kind of stuff was really limited in terms of communication, and it's something that continues to be an issue across a lot of Nintendo games.
So
just putting that out there for folks.
But we are absolutely open to re-reviewing games if something fundamental has changed. That is not a, hey, one more level got added or something. It's more about fundamentally changing a flaw or enhancing a feature.
And we're not here to give you a review roller coaster where today it's a 6 and then tomorrow it's a 10.
Yeah, we've seen other sites try to do that and it's not. Yeah, it's just not our style.
It's just not practical.
I will personally say that if they add a battle mode with Block Fort, I will change my personal review to 10 out of 10.
10? Okay.
Well, last question for the crushing block and then we're going to go because it is late on a Friday and we really want to go home. So last question, excuse me, comes from Gabe. Gabe says, hey, my guys, my name is Gabe.
Oh.
The show. I wanted to ask about Nintendo's decisions. I will always love Nintendo. I have always had a Nintendo console in my house and will continue to do so for the foreseeable future. However, as you may know, they have problems. The company, not the consoles. As fans, we have to deal with Amiibo scarcity, no third-party support, lackluster online, different regions getting different services, i.e. being able to purchase Amiibo from Nintendo's UK site. However, in the US, for us, the new 3DS not coming with Majora's Mask preloaded, but Europe got it. Below expectation Wii U hardware sales, and many, many more. If you could fix one of Nintendo's problems, which would you choose? What do you think would make the greatest impact in Nintendo's favor?
That's a really good question.
Great question, Gabe. I'm glad you sent this.
That's easy for me.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Oh, excuse me, mister. I'm cool. So what is so easy about it?
Well, if you could fix one of their problems, as much as I love Amiibo and would want to buy them, one of the core problems for me with the Wii U is that I love this machine, I love the games on it, but its appeal is limited because of the overall breadth of the lineup, the software lineup. And so I would fix their third-party relations and, you know, basically the moment you boost the amount of original software that becomes available on this platform, you have a vibrant platform that then more players play, so you have more people to play with and more people discover these amazing games. That's the biggest issue for me with a limited platform. It was similar with the GameCube, right? It was somewhat similar with the N64, where people discounted the N64 because of the cart format. But with the Wii U, it's really, really pronounced. You can find awesome indie games on the platform, but, you know, it is a limited experience.
So I have my answer, but if you have yours, I'll let you go first.
No, you can go first.
Okay.
So I do have mine.
Mine is slightly similar to yours, but not really. Mm-hmm. Because I feel like the biggest thing holding them back, in at least in my heart, is sort of an unawareness of, to some degree, where technology is right now. I feel like they just do not, they are not quick to adopt, they are not quick to sort of grab onto things that you're seeing in other places and it's being done right and they still choose to sort of design it their own way. Let's take Mario Kart 8's update process as an example. When you went to update your Mario Kart 8, how did you do that?
What did I do? I started the game, then it said there was an update, then I updated it, then there was no update, and then I had to go and update.
You're praying to the update gods that you got it right. And when you go into the game, like, I woke up on Thursday morning, I checked, I tap on the application, launch it, no update happened. I quit the application, come back out, go to the eShop so that in the back of my brain, everything is synchronized. Yeah. This is the excuses that I've built around what's happening.
Yeah.
Then I go back into the application. Oh, there's an update. Then it starts to download. Then I check the game. And even though the update either wasn't applied or it wasn't there,
yeah.
I had to back out. I said, forget this. I'm going to bed.
Yeah.
Then I got back up an hour later, went and checked, and everything was there. But I feel like that's just one example of them just slightly being behind. I think this voiceover situation is another part of that.
In the store.
I think the idea of synchronizing like seamlessly. So I've been playing a lot of Hearthstone lately. Ever since it came out on iPhone, I have fallen into the Hearthstone bucket. Like I'm in. I love it. I think about Hearthstone all the time now. When I play that game on my phone, and when I play that game on my iPad, and when I play that game now on my Mac, I don't have to do any syncing of any time. Yeah. I could play a match on this phone, stop playing, open the iPad version, everything is caught up. Yep. Everything's the same. Yep. The decks are all aligned. It's not that, like, these things are possible.
Meanwhile, Nintendo sent out Mewtwo codes a few weeks ago, and one of them you could redeem on the shop on Wii U, and the other one you had to redeem on the in-game shop on 3DS, which didn't exist when they sent out those codes. So you had to go into the shop and manually update the 3DS version of Smash to redeem the code within the game, but you didn't have to do that on the Wii U version. And it was like, why am I doing this?
Yeah.
You know, and that kind of goes, that kind of partners with
all
what I wanted to say.
All hand in hand, buying software from the eShop.
Yeah.
Do you own this game? Are you buying this DLC? Do you own this?
That's the thing
you
I would change.
You tell me. your job. I'm about to crack because like part of me is like,
That's the thing I want to see them change more than anything is that sort of dedicated
that
account system. Get it together. Like how many times do I have to show you that it's like dating a senile person. You're like, where did you leave the keys? I left them in the car. Why are they in the car? Well, you've never driven the car. That's our car. Like, how many times do I have to buy Mario 64 before they're like, that's yours? It's yours forever. Don't worry about it. How many times do I have to buy the original? How about the original Mario 25 times?
But what you're saying is, whereas I think of everyone else, because I want everybody to discover awesome games, you're completely selfish. You just want to get your updates faster. And,
no, I just want to be a Nintendo fan and stop suffering over
All right. But there's the reward.
He's losing him. He's cracking.
I just cracked.
That's the end of it.
No, I just cracked. But seriously, it's like the other day, I turned to a friend of mine. I'm crying with laughter. It's right here. Uh-huh. I turned to a friend of mine. I was like, look, why does every cool thing that comes from Nintendo lately feel like it comes bundled with an apology?
Yeah.
Like, I'm just, what is that about?
Well, it's their two steps forward, one step back Nintendo
they're
approach.
They're a smart company. They make amazing games. They know how to make software. Like, no one's business. They have these accidental way of tripping over incredible ideas. And then in other areas, you're like, who's at the wheel right now?
Tripping is perfect, and it's what they actually put into the Smash Brothers game before this one. It's your favorite character in the world running full speed about to do the best move of his life, and then he falls flat on his face.
You know what?
And he gets back up and he does the move, but that's part of the equation.
Remember, right? There's a hardware maker named Sony. There's a software maker named Microsoft. And then there's the crazy toy store owner named Nintendo.
Oh, I know.
And when you walk into that toy store, shit is going to fall on your head. Like, there's going to be a Mogwai in a cage, and you have no idea why it's there. And that's,
oh, it's that kind of toy store.
It doesn't all fit quite together.
Even if my reasons are slightly selfish, I feel like these are part of a recipe that has been holding them back for the last couple of hardware cycles.
Yep.
It has, right? This sort of pride that they are the innovators of gaming and they have great ideas and they know what they're doing, bundled with just to some degree what can be perceived as arrogance, because they're not looking over at the other pool and going, well, they got it working that way and that's really smart. How can we make that better? They're not asking that question. They're just saying, this is how we do it.
Yeah.
And I'm just like, hey, I don't. And sometimes that doesn't work out. Sometimes it does.
Yeah, and some of that is definitely. I mean, you saw the chink in the armor with the PlayStation Vita and the PlayStation 4 as well. Mm-hmm. How they can't. They're not quite on the same page. I mean, like, lend your Vita to somebody else and have them try to log in with that PSN account, right? Like, the platforms get really complicated when you have to deal with multiple systems and you spread your development so it's really thin. Nintendo has so many platforms, you know?
Yeah, no, and to be fair, I feel like this technology problem, to a degree, affects consoles as a whole.
Mm-hmm.
I don't mean to throw Nintendo under the bus with this example, because I feel like even between your Vita and your PS4, it's not quite seamless yet. Mm-hmm. It's still something something that the hardware makers don't entirely understand, but yet you look over at the smartphone pool and those kids have it, and they're and they've been had it. You know what I mean? Brian, what would you change about Nintendo?
Well, so I was hinting at it, but it's the account system, right? It goes right into that. It's just sort of it's that never knowing if there's any ownership of what I'm buying or what I'm getting. It's rebuying the same things over and over. It's having two systems that should know each other, but they don't. They're total strangers. They're just
they're cousins.
Yeah, they never talk. But their parents are always talking about how great they are together, and they're not. They don't have any idea what each other does. So that's my big thing is sort of being like, every time I buy a game from them, I go, this is going to be the one you guys are going to remember, right? In a few years, when you're reselling this game, you can go, well, Brian bought that 5 years ago. He has it already. It's his.
Yeah.
But I don't. I don't have it. So I would like to see them finally address that. You and I interviewed Reggie before the Wind Waker Wii U came out.
Mm-hmm.
And we asked him about this. And he said, well, it's something we're always working on. And, you know, we have stuff to announce soon. No, you don't. No, you don't. You never did.
I think to some degree, though, it still is not so much that they're it's hard for me to say they're not aware of it, because I think Nintendo of America is very aware of it. And they do try to get Japan to understand some of that stuff. But at the end of the day, Japan still calls a lot of those shots.
Yeah,
and so ultimately it becomes them trying their best to inform them so that they can make the best decision possible.
Yeah. And they may need an external company to help them with that too, right?
Sure.
Like one, DNA.
Yeah, yeah. That was a token example of the first time you've ever seen Nintendo reach out to another company and said, hey, now we own half of you, or close to half of you. Like the largest stake in your company is now us, and we want you to help us make this awesome thing.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying I want to see them do that all the time, but I do want them to be a lot more aware of just where the world is right now in terms of technology.
Yeah.
And 3DS, Wii U don't feel inherently cool anymore.
And they have made some really strange, shrewd moves in the past where, you know, there's a clear leader in the market inventing something, getting it right, and then there's another company that Nintendo allied itself with. You know, just go back to like RandNet and like the first like Nintendo Internet basically was this horse racing Tribune thing, and like it didn't quite work. There's the CD drive maker with Philips where then that didn't quite work out, and they scorned Sony and like they have a really weird strategy sometimes picking the allies.
Yeah.
But, you know, sometimes it works out, too.
Yeah, and sometimes they make something like a Wii, which absolutely transformed the face of video games.
That's right.
At least the first 5 years, the Wii was not a fad. Anyone who still hangs on to that, like, you're crazy.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that was 100% a very smart engineering move that ultimately got them a foothold again on games. And then smartphones came along.
Yeah, and maybe right next to that, Mogwai is sitting a brilliant concept for the NX, right?
Yeah.
That's going to dazzle us when that gets announced next year.
Well, Gabe, thank you so much for that question. That was really deep. I feel like it was like relief to just let some of this
I didn't
stuff
know
out.
You.
That was.
You have all this anger
to watch.
You. Yeah, like
it's good to watch.
It
was funny.
Fear.
It was funny to experience. I'll
it's
say that.
It's because suffering. You care, though. It's because you love.
No, we all do, though. Yeah. I think we all, you know, pretty much have. You know, we try to do our jobs as best we can, but we also have an investment to, like, hey, we hope to see them kind of do well. We hope to see games do well in general.
Yeah,
it's not even a tribalistic sort of passion for Nintendo alone. It's just games in general.
No, I mean, I love this industry, and, I love my job. So.
Aww. Cool. Well, thank you for listening to Nintendo Voice Chat. This has been, as always, a weekly show on IGN. We're running a little late today, but we always have a show for you, so please be ready for that. On top of that, we also have a lot of other content, a lot of other shows. Brian has some great Star Wars videos that should be hitting the site at some point in the near future, so you make sure you keep tuned for that. Also, we are on iTunes, so we would love if you're a supporter of the show or you have feedback for us, you head on over to iTunes, leave us a review, let us know what you think. Lastly, you can also send in questions and feedback to nvc@ign.com, and you can follow us on Twitter. You can follow Brian Altano at
Agent Bizzle.
You can find Pear Schneider at
Pear IGN.
You can find myself, Jose_Otero, on Twitter. Thank you very much for listening, and we will be back next week with more. Oh, by the way, Ben, thank you again for the amiibo. This was very sweet. We'll be back next week with more Nintendo Voice Chat.
Anna Sheridan, New York Times best-selling author of supernatural horror. Missing for nearly 6 months now.
That's not possible. Is the compass broken? Or did I turn to the side?
Given the circumstances of her disappearance, someone with a more vivid imagination might decide she'd pierced the veil, so to speak.
Weak radio signal. 700 meters. Closing fast.
There's no place for ghost stories and close encounters in this investigation, or any other.
I need you to find me.
To save yourself.
Of course. What else would it be?
The Sheridan Tapes, a serialized horror mystery podcast. Stream the complete series today on Realm and on all podcasting platforms.